Guys, I do not have to dress up to have fun, okay? Come on, don't be a squeef.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 13, Halloween. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. I lied. It's just me. Quick mention that you can buy an ad on this very podcast. Go to previously.tv/ads and fill out the form there. We'll talk shop. All right, guys, take it away.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm a little annoyed because I hate Halloween episodes. How do you feel about them?
I don't mind.
Why do you hate them?
I don't know. Except Buffy. I can think of a couple of exceptions, but generally speaking, I find the parallels that they try to draw ham-handed and annoying.
Because everyone's always trying to discover something about their character through their costume and blah, blah, blah. They're dumb.
Well, okay, but what are your thoughts on other holiday episodes? Like, what of a Christmas episode and, of course, the Feast of the Epiphany episodes?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. Yeah. Arbor Day episodes?
Yeah.
Really, really pro. Yeah. Other than that, not a fan.
All right.
Well, the timing of this is pretty good because it is almost actually Halloween for real as we record this. So at least there's that, and then we'll get past it. And then you can enjoy / hate all the new Halloween episodes for all the other shows that are actually airing real new episodes, you know, in
prime time. Have you noticed, though, in recent years, the ascendancy of the Thanksgiving episode?
Yeah.
Like, that's become a thing on a lot of sitcoms now.
There was also the year that, like, every show did a leap day episode. Like, 30 Rock did one, and Modern Family did one, and Parks and Recreation all did one. Like, all of a sudden, all the sitcoms decided Leap Day was a thing. Like, it's kind of not, but...
Oh, and that's going to be coming up, too, next year.
Is it? Oh, right.
Yeah, right?
Every presidential election year. Yep. You're right. But
okay, listeners, we're getting to it.
Don't be such a squeef.
Third squeef reference. Is this third or fourth?
Oh, it's at least the fourth.
At the top?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so it's a Halloween episode, as we mentioned. There's three plots. Let's start with the dumbest one first. The C story is David not really knowing what his place is in the world. He's not really a tween, but he's not in the gang. And again, like, I don't understand the timeline of what his position is in the group, because, like, in the episode with the ashes, he's at the Walsh house at the end eating popcorn, but then in the next one, he's trying to see if Jonna wants to hang out, and then after that, it's like there's no mention of it, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. Obviously, this one had to air around Halloween, but it feels like some of the other ones got shuffled a bit because his relation to everyone else doesn't really make a huge amount of sense.
Well, and also, Emily is kind of back
randomly. She's suddenly back after weeks, but yeah. All right, so... David's doing his radio show and Scott comes by. David makes a joke that he thinks Scott should be out blowing up pumpkins. So if you forgot and you're going to need to remember again in the next episode, Scott came back from Oklahoma really into guns and rockets and fireworks and shit. Scott wants to go do pranks at the corner, which I guess is like some infamous corner where shit goes down in Beverly Hills on Halloween's. And even if there are cops around, he doesn't care. David thinks that's baby stuff. He's going to go to this Halloween party. But when he gets there in his incredibly weird multiple shades of purple and lavender, like, wizard blazer, that's, of course, like, sized for Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, God.
It's not as much fun as he thought it would be. And we hear that in clip number 2.
You like the music? I picked it out myself.
What do you mean?
It's sort of a cottage industry.
Why?
Do you want to dance?
No.
So I guess a night of Pop Monkey Love's out of the question.
I rarely recommend watching the episodes because they're so corny, but you might want to watch it and just fast forward to the scene because the way this girl plays it is kind of hilarious. Like, she's so over him. She has no interest in anything he's saying, and why is such a perfect answer to it's kind of a cottage industry?
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
She's right.
Why? Do you want to dance? No. She's my hero. And yeah. Also, ending it on that hot monkey love. I don't know why, but monkey love just feels like such a 90s phrase to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. And not in a good way. Obviously, there is no mm-hmm. good way. Anyway, so David goes outside. He and Steve are like wistful about the egg fights that they used to get into in junior high. And then David decides he's so wistful, he's going to go to the corner and find Scott. And when he gets there, okay, please go to the visual aids because he's whittling something. What in the actual hell is he whittling? Like, it's a piece of wood, clearly, but I don't know what it's like he's Buffy getting ready to make a stake.
There's a few certainties in life, and one of them is you cannot trust anybody who whittles under the age of like 65. Because they're just going to stab you.
Probably. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely intent on the task. Like, it's not something he's doing to just pass the time until David does or does not show up. It's clearly related to the eggs, but they're eggs. Like, you don't need to stab them. You throw them.
You don't. And I made it a GIF so that you can see how, when he turns it, how sharp it actually is. Like, this thing is really going to hurt someone if he tries to stab him with it. But the saddest part is that he's in this little grove of bushes before David gets there, all by himself. Like, how much fun could that possibly be, just hanging out there waiting to pelt probably seventh graders with eggs at the opposite corner, but whatever. The point is that for this whole thing is to demonstrate that David and Scott are maybe growing apart, or are they? It's hard to tell. It depends on the day. And they both get nostalgic about it in clip number 3.
You know what? The good old days are over. Kids don't have fun the way we used to. Times have changed. Not for the better.
You want to egg a car?
Sure.
I mean, you might as well.
Yeah, you're there.
Mm-hmm. You've got the eggs. He's got like 700 eggs there ready for hucking. And then they establish later that it's 11 o'clock. When they're going to egg this car, it turns out to be Brandon, so they don't, but then they do. And he's, as we'll hear in the next plot line, they're taking these kids home that Emily's been trick-or-treating with at 11? Why are they going home so late? I don't know why they bothered to.
Well, they lost the kids, as we'll find out. Spoiler. Just to wrap up this plot line, I see what they were trying to do, and it's funny because you watch this at the time and you sort of see that they're like stabbing towards something.
Mm-hmm.
And then My So-Called Life comes along and does it so much better with Angela and Sharon Chersky.
Completely.
That you're like, oh, yeah, that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
They tried. I think Brian Austin Green doesn't get enough credit for what he brings to this plot line.
I agree with that.
Yeah, his portrayal of this awkwardness is actually pretty good given the writing mm-hmm. and what he's forced to wear. But yeah.
Yeah, both of them commit. I mean, we'll hear it more in the next episode, but like Douglas Emerson has got to be the dorkiest dork that ever dorked and like in an endearing way, which is hard to do. And Brian Austin Green has to be like sometimes his friend and sometimes like zero patience for him and like embarrassed by him. And that's very... a real high school thing that happens, but as you say, better on My So-Called Life.
Yep.
Moving on to the B story, Brandon's dorky night at home. She's at school. He and Emily are chatting about this big party. She says that she wasn't invited to it and asks if he's gonna go, and he says no and explains why in clip number 4.
Yeah, you know, I hate parties. You go there to socialize, and I'm standing around a bunch of smoke and noise, screaming at people that you like. And then you want to leave, but you can't because you can't find the people you're supposed to drive home. And I don't drink, and I dance like a white guy. So. But if you want to go, maybe...
After that buildup, I wouldn't dare.
Fair enough. I mean, Brandon is so oblivious that he can't tell that she's hinting around for him to take her, but whatever. She doesn't seem to care that much either. And so then the next time we see Brandon, he's at the Walsh house helping Cindy and Jim get ready for Halloween, which is going to be disastrous. Clip number 5.
You know what they say? Raisins are nature's candy.
Go to hell, Jim Walsh.
Oh, my God.
Well, wait.
Jim.
Okay, that was a dumb thing to say. But can I say raisins and cookies get a bad rap. They're not that bad.
I get like, out.
Are good at oatmeal raisin cookie is delicious.
No, this is an anti-raisin podcast.
No, it isn't. Because of the fucking raisins.
All right. Well, we'll dig into this deeper on again with raisins. Coming next week, we're gonna have it out.
I know I don't like raisins, but Sarah is even more anti-raisin than I am.
I just think it's like bacon is the positive, like trendy thing, like the past few years, and like harping on raisins is like the socially acceptable negative thing of equal measure.
Raisins are terrible.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
No.
Because they're awful. Nope. I am a raisinist.
Okay. All right. Anyways, moving on.
The Walshes are giving out raisins. Leaving aside your feeling about raisins and cookies, which are incorrect, by the way, can we at least agree that no one should give out raisins for Halloween?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you want to have your house egged on purpose for some reason.
Completely, which is exactly what you deserve.
Yeah. I remember once a lady ran out of candy when we were trick-or-treating, and she like, instead of just saying, "I'm sorry, I ran out of candy," she actually got like a handful of granola. And this is back in the 80s.
Oh, I remember this story. Oh, Jesus.
You know, this is back in the 80s. So, it wasn't like, Quaker dips or anything like that. It was just like
loose granola.
It was Birkenstock Berkeley, granola, like back from like these to do in the 70s. And
which you had to go into like a separate store to buy.
Yeah.
And they called it muesli, and there was actual fucking bark in it with like an ant trapped in the sap. My mother may or may not have bought this stuff.
She put it in like a little piece of tinfoil or something and then gave it to us. We're like, thanks, lady.
My mother also gave away mints one year. Ooh. My mom.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom, I mean, I get Cindy's point. Like, she's trying to not have something in the house that she's going to want to eat herself. But like, there are other kinds of candy that presumably she doesn't like. Like, just get a chocolate bar you don't enjoy. That never works. Moving on. Dylan arrives, and he's on the right side of history with this one, clip number 6.
This is stick up. Give me all your candy. Ooh, raisins?
Oh, my God. McKay 2016. First of all, he's in this Bonnie and Clyde costume, that wild cheap. He's totally foxy in it.
He really looks good.
Ew, raisins?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
All right, hang on. Okay, just before we get off the raisin thing. On Twitter, tweet me at Glark, GLARK, +1 raisins or -1 raisins, if you're listening to this podcast. At Glark, +1 raisins, -1 raisins. We'll figure this out.
I don't like your chances. But thank God they're not talking about melon.
Oh, I don't think I'm going to win.
It would get really ugly.
At least, at the very least, I'll prove my point that the internet loves to hate a raisin.
We also get a tiny moment of fake animosity between Brandon and Dylan that's so random and yet kind of endearing in clip number 7.
Drift, small guy. Drop dead, eh?
I don't know. I liked it.
I love it. Drift.
Yeah.
Stealing it.
Small and small guy.
Drift, small guy. Yeah, this is a very good episode for Dylan, mm-hmm. I would say.
Agree. So later, Brandon has put in his vampire teeth and he's giving out candy. And I put this in the visual aids as well. Why do the Walshes have so many Halloween decorations on the inside of their house where no one but them are going to be? Because it's a TV show.
Yeah.
And he opens the door and Emily is there. She's brought her niece and nephew. They're in ghost costumes that violate every single rule every police officer that came to your school in October when you were a kid told you about costumes. They 100% cover their face. The eye holes don't look near big enough either, which they shouldn't be there, but they also are too small. And you can't see anything, and you can't see who they are. Like, it's just really unsafe. So obviously,
well, and they're fastened around the neck with what looks like ponytail holders.
Yes!
They're probably cutting off their airway.
Yes. And they announce very proudly, these are her niece and nephew, Lauren and Drew, and they say that Emily made their costumes. Like, good job, Crafto. Can't wait to go and visit your Etsy store. Brandon is also, this is also in the visual aids, they're very excited by his vampire teeth, so he goofs around with them a little bit and then takes it way too far and gets super handsy with them. Did you notice this too, Sarah?
Yeah, like with the snuggling and the roar.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He pretends he's going to pounce on them, and then he actually does and like just gathers them in a bear hug for way too long, really inappropriate. He literally just met these children seconds ago.
Yeah, and they're like four. Like, I feel like that's not an age where they roll with that.
Mm-mm.
And, don't know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Maybe it's because they couldn't see him. Perhaps. Maybe it's because he's a small guy and they didn't feel threatened.
Yeah, they felt they could just tell him to drift if it was getting to be a problem. Anyway.
Drop dead vamp.
Jim shows up. Brandon reintroduces Emily, who I guess he hasn't seen her since Brenda was screaming at her in their kitchen right in front of him and his wife. And then one of the kids has to go and pee, so Cindy brings them away. She also gets a really cute mom moment where the other one is like, I already peed before we left. And Cindy's like, why don't you come and try just in case? Like, I don't know. It's another tiny touch that makes her very likable.
Yeah, true. And, especially since this is really Emily's job, and why is Cindy getting stuck with pee patrol with two stranger children?
Yeah.
But anyway.
So after peeing, Emily is getting ready to leave with the kids, invites Brandon to come out and trick-or-treat with them. He's weirdly hesitant about going, like, the raisins aren't going to give themselves away. No one wants them. Just go. But finally, Cindy tells him it's okay, so he does. And then when they're outside, we get a message from the Beverly Hills Chamber of Commerce about how they bus in kids from shitty neighborhoods to go trick-or-treating there. Brandon boringly reminisces about his Halloweens in Minnesota, and before you know it, they have lost track of the kids. And later, the cops show up, and Brandon glares with intensity at them through the window like it's their fault. I know that's his concern face, but there's a very fine line. And one of the cops tries to reassure him in clip number 8.
Don't worry. Every Halloween, we get a couple of missing kid reports. We haven't lost one yet.
What about that kid in Truesdale?
Roger.
The rare, actually funny moment in Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh,
Roger.
Yeah.
So after the cops take off, Brandon and Emily, or mostly Emily, is in a tizzy, and he grabs her by the arm, also in the visual aids, way too aggressively, like he's furious at her. Somebody please learn how to direct Jason Priestley. He was not doing himself any favors, and you are not helping him by letting him get away with this terrible tics. She panics for a while, and then when they go back to the Walsh house, the kids are there because Emily had told them that if they got separated, they should just go back to the last house they remember. And Cindy's been eating their candy, so she's convinced that they should not give out raisins next year. So it's a net gain for the culture.
Exactly.
Later, Emily and Brandon, after they've dropped off the kids at 11, end up at the Peach Pit. There's some stupid, boring, flirty talk, and she admits that she brought the kids there purposely. Calls him
foreshadowing.
Calls him frighteningly normal, but says she likes it. And he tries to play with her hair, but as you'll see in the visual aids, it is too sticky. Just pops back. And then
just ask for another take. Like, he tries to run his fingertips through it, and then they literally get stuck, and he has to, like, go back and then go around, like, detouring. And then he's sort of, like, just doing some business with an earring. Like, just call cut and start over.
Yeah. It's very strange. But anyway, this is the moment where they, I guess, become a couple, because then they start making out, and that's the end of this storyline, which is pretty boring. I also was waiting in the episode that's coming up in a couple of weeks, when we get to learn more about Emily and her background and stuff. For some reason I remembered her admitting that she got the kids to lose themselves on purpose too, but obviously that's not the case. Doesn't come up. But I suspected it in this whole episode. Moving on. A
story.
Could have
been in a cutscene.
Could be. Yeah, maybe.
I support you.
Thank you. A story. The big Halloween party. Girls are at school carving pumpkins for reasons unknown, talking about whether they're going to rent costumes from a shop. And Brenda says clip number 9.
Can't really picture myself going to Hollywood Costumes and renting something for this party that Joan Collins or somebody else already sweated in.
You wish.
Yeah, really.
The conversation gets weirder as Kelly comes in and says that the guys that she and Donna were supposed to go to this party with. So again, Donna's seeing some other guy. Where's David in this? Timeline make no sense. Moving on. Kelly says this in clip number 10.
The worst part is, 2 months ago, we rented Lucy and Ethel costumes to go with their Ricky Ricardo and Fred Mertz costumes. Now we're going to look like fools.
What's a Fred Mertz costume?
2 months ago?
Well, as A, yes. And B, what is a Fred Mertz costume? Like, it's called a suit. And maybe a bald cap. But whatever.
Yeah. Well, no wonder they ditched you. Who wants to go as Fred Mertz?
Seriously.
Nobody?
Yeah, nobody.
Okay. Well.
So Kelly and Donna now have to get new costumes for this party that apparently is tonight. So whatever. But and then there's some obnoxious couple stuff about Brenda and Dylan in clip 11.
Ah, Mademoiselle Brenda. Voulez-vous graver une pumpkin avec moi?
I may barf.
I didn't actually mind that. Like, I wrote it down, but he was being so cheesy. Like, usually when Dylan thinks that he's being funny, he's not being funny. And This is one of those episodes where, like, he's actually maybe trying less hard and is actually amusing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was the I may barf that, you know.
Yeah, well,
Kelly's timing is perfect.
Usually valid.
Yeah.
We'll allow it.
And if you have been missing the fake take on Hooray for Hollywood from the Lydia Leeds episode, clip number 12.
Ooh. Oh. Okay.
Yeah, that's all.
Happy lunar cycle to us.
So that's the music that plays us into this costume shop. The Who Framed Roger Rabbit guy, Charles Fleischer, is the clerk. He shows them various options, including the ones that they reserved. But since they're going to look dumb being Lucy and Ethel without Fred and Ricky, like, why don't you just be Lucy and Ethel? That's already a couple costume. Whatever. There then is a bunch of business about them looking at various costumes. And Kelly, for some reason, is super horny this season and is gravitating toward classic slut-a-ween, forgive the phrase, but that's what it's called. She comes out in a showgirl thing that's very revealing. She tries to get Donna to get one that's like even more showgirly, but Donna's not into it. Has an idea.
Because it's too revealing and she's like, I don't know what her, she's like, oh, I can't get away with that or something like that. And then she ends up in the mermaid costume that, you know, we have to sit through approximately 88 weeks of unfunny
stuff. You know, stuff. That's
you know,
weird.
Stuff.
Just point a camera
and
be like,
second of all,
stuff.
Like, her body is fine.
Yeah.
I don't
think
and
it's
if your objection to the showgirl costume is that it's too revealing, you're wearing like two sequin triangles and a skin tight rubber thing. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know.
Shut up, Donna.
For real. So there's more costume business. It seriously goes on forever. And then when we get to Donna wants to surprise everyone with her possibly stupid, possibly funniest costume, which, as you heard, is a mermaid, which we will see endlessly. She stands in the corner and can't move in it. And Dylan picks out Bonnie and Clyde. And when we see him, as Sarah said, show up at the Walsh house, he looks great. Brenda looks great. They look great together. It's an awesome look. Dave, yes.
Yep. What is the average age of the writer's room here? Because what set of teens, or whatever they're supposed to be, in the 90s are going as I Love Lucy and fucking Bonnie and Clyde? Like, I'd be surprised if they even knew who those people were, given that they're not the most worldly of characters.
I can recall from this time actually that those both would have been like themes for fashion spreads in 17, and I'm not kidding, like especially Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah. And I guess I Love Lucy.
No, I would have known who that was, and there was always like, if your group of friends had a redhead in it, someone always went as Lucy.
I suppose also the 80 novelty tie craze has probably educated that generation on I Love Lucy, Three Stooges, and all that kind of shit. All right, fine.
Pianos.
I retract.
Thank you. Get out. Go eat a raisin. Jeez.
Too far, Tara.
Just the one raisin. So we get to the party. Steve is dressed as Zorro. I hate to say it, but he actually looks pretty good too. They all look good.
There's a couple side shots where his like lion's mane mullet is really not going with it, but
right.
I kind of like the Cotton Club Zorro mustache on Steve.
Yep.
Anyway, it's
and
not the worst.
So everyone is just greeting each other and whatever. Dawn is being a nuisance, and then everyone in the party turns to look at Kelly as she comes in a witch outfit, in air quotes, as we pan really slowly up her body, this is in the visual aids, we see that her and literally her entire leg, like up to what would be her panty line if she were wearing any, which I assume she's not, is out. Brenda's reaction is that she's immediately furious and she drags Kelly outside to yell at her in clip 13.
What? I think I look great. Did your mom see you like this? Brenda, lighten up. It's just a costume. I'm a friendly witch.
Yeah, right, Callie. Glinda, the good witch of the East.
I mean, do you want guys staring at you like that all night long?
What's wrong with that?
I want to make an impression. You probably don't remember what it's like having to meet guys, right?
Oh, and that's how you want to meet them?
Why, doesn't it fit?
It fits fine. But I'm warning you, you're looking for trouble.
Brenda, if you want to be Miss Goody Goody all night, that's fine. I don't. I've just been dumped. It's Halloween. And if I feel like dressing up any way I want, I will. I think I know how to take care of myself by now.
Foreshadowing. Also, while they're having this exchange, a Phantom of the Opera walks into the party past Kelly and totally checks out her butt, which you can see in the visual aids.
Yeah. The Edward Scissorhands does it a few times, too. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Brenda's attitude here, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'm more like, I wish she would take issue with how cheesy and dated the costume is.
Yeah.
Like her hair, she's basically wearing like two peignoir sets
panels
on top of each other.
Yeah. Yep.
It's, yeah. Ooh, it's really 80s and it's not, I mean, it's revealing, but it's not sexy to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for us, but I agree.
Yeah.
So but, back in the, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I don't know, like, you know, Bonnie's not for us either, but that's more, I don't know. I would try to get after that before yeah. I would try to get after Kelly, because the hair, oh, the hair.
Yeah. So then we get back inside the party. There's more stuff from Donna. Just so in case you forgot when this takes place, Kelly rejects an elf. And then the friend of one of Jackie's friends comes over, or the son of one of Jackie's friends comes over and tries to get with Kelly in clip 14.
You want to go for a drive? I have my dad's Infiniti and a bottle of whiskey.
I'll tell you what, Michael Sharp.
Cheddar.
Right. Why don't you take your bottle and go get Daddy's Infiniti started?
Yeah.
Then drive up the side of the house, you know, where the driveway turns around?
Yeah, sure.
Wait about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then put the car in gear, drive to Santa Monica Pier, and keep on going. See if that baby floats. Okay?
Which is not bad. You know.
I guess.
It's a little wordy, but so Brenda is listening to this whole thing, comes over and congratulates Kelly, decides on the basis of this diss that Kelly will be fine. And then they stand together and objectify guys for a while. Someone is apparently dressed as a tampon, which they either couldn't build a costume that looked like it or couldn't show it on TV because we don't see it.
And yeah, then, probably the latter.
Probably the latter. And then
it's not that hard to make a tampon costume.
I suppose.
No.
And then Kelly's eye falls on a cowboy, and later they have a meet cute in clip 15.
Howdy, partner.
Hey there, witchy one.
Your horse outside?
Hitched him right up next to your broomstick.
Thirsty after the dusty trail? Or does the horse drink first?
Well, suppose you and I have a cup of your witch's brew first, and then we'll water my horse. Where do you go to school?
West Beverly, where do you go?
USC.
Really? I bet at SC you're quite the cowboy.
I'll bet at West Beverly you're quite the little witch.
You better watch it, cowboy, or I'll turn you back into an obnoxious frat boy.
Feisty, I like that.
What, in a filly?
Say, how about I just throw you over my saddle and we ride off into the sunset together?
I don't ride on a first date.
Well, now, is this a date?
Could be.
How soon can we have the second date?
That depends on how you play your cards.
I always play my cards right, darling. I don't like to lose.
Woohoo! Fasty! I like that. Oh.
I hate to say it knowing where things are going, but that's actually a pretty good first meeting, in my opinion.
I guess.
I don't know. We've heard worse banter on this show, certainly.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's pretty low bar, but true. Not, I wish he had dropped the Southern accent after, like, where do you go to school? USC? Like, you're, you know, clearly not a member of the James gang. You could stop with the twang now.
So later, when we resume with them, Kelly and the cowboy are dancing very close to a fast song, because we know they love each other, whatever. More stuff from Donna, and then Steve has to come over and give her a condescending lecture about being herself. Like, I mean, he's not wrong. It is a stupid costume, but also it's a Halloween party. Like, you're not really supposed to be yourself. And the condescending forehead kiss is not necessary either, Dad.
Yeah, no.
But later, she has more regrets because she needs Brenda to help her go pee. And then back with Kelly and the cowboy, she wants to get something to eat. We can tell where things may be going when she wants chicken wings and he overrules her on her snack choices and shushes her with a finger on her mouth. Like, okay.
Not good.
And then red flag. So she wants to go somewhere less crowded. And they do in clip 16.
Wow, this place is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it used to belong to some movie mogul way back then, but...
Hey, Bewitched. I'm not a big one for architecture. Tell me something about your history.
It's really not all that interesting.
It is to me.
Well, okay. I was born here in Los Angeles, lived in Beverly Hills all my life.
Do you have a boyfriend?
No, not right now, but for a while I was...
Are you looking for one?
You know, I really don't want to think about anything heavy or long-term like that tonight. It's Halloween, you know? A night of dress-up and make-believe, right? In fact, they're probably having the contest party right now, so we shouldn't...
You like to play make-believe?
Sure. Everyone does.
Great.
He locks the door.
Let's play make-believe.
Danger music.
Wow, drum pads of danger.
This is also the first time I think that we see more of, I mean, you described it perfectly earlier, but this is where we first actually see that instead of being a dress, it really is just like a corset with two long sort of skirt pieces diaphanously draped over it. So it's slit on both sides. So it's a lot. I'm not saying in any way what Brenda was trying to say before. I'm just saying it's a lot. And when we come back from commercial, the cowboy is just running the standard date rape script. Did we say, by the way, that this is Jimmy from Seinfeld who speaks about himself in the third person? Because it is.
Yeah, it is. And he's getting upset.
He is getting upset. I mean, I could go through all the beats of what happens, but like, you've seen a date rape happen on a show before. Like, you know exactly what he says. There's all the stuff of, you know, you wouldn't have come up here if you didn't want it, blah, blah, blah. What finally happens is that Brenda and Donna come out of the wrong door from the bathroom. They think that they're just fooling around, but Kelly is obviously very upset. And we hear the aftermath in clip 17.
Kelly, stop kidding. They're going to believe you.
He locked the door. You bastard. Dylan, come in here. I need you.
You guys got this way, way out of proportion. I mean, this is so funny. What?
He tried to attack Kelly.
Hey, we were both into it, and then suddenly she started lying. You guys know what I mean, right?
How dare you lay a hand on her? I love that girl.
Hey, Steve, it's all right, man. Let's just take Dale Evans here and show him the trail.
I love that Brenda's screech for Dylan is so piercing that he can hear it through an entire party downstairs.
And appears 8 seconds later. Good job.
This is a couple that's in sync. You have to give them that. They take the cowboy outside and physically throw him out of the building. He tries to defend himself by saying that when a girl dresses like a slut, and Steve punches him, which is satisfying. That is in the visual aids as well. And then upstairs, Brenda decides to be a great friend. Just kidding. She's shitty in clip 18.
I'm such an idiot. I thought I was being all sexy dressing like this, you know. Look where it got me. Kelly, I tried to tell you that the dress was a little too much.
Is this the time, really, Brenda?
Yeah, I think she got it.
Yeah, she's already, she's crying. Like, she's already clearly regretting her costume choice. not helpful and not the point. The exchange goes on in clip 19.
It wasn't the dress, though. It was me and what I did.
Kelly, you said no. He should have listened, period.
I should have listened to you. You tried to warn me. You tried to tell me what I was walking into.
Kelly, you said no.
I said no too late. Might as well have been saying yes, you know? I was trying to act all cool and everything. Talking sexy. I was leading him on.
Well, then he should go take a cold shower. Or whatever they do.
Can I say something? I mean, I know the last thing you need right now is another guy telling you what to do or what to think.
Go ahead, please.
You're blaming yourself for leading that guy on. But I want you to know, as a guy, it doesn't matter how much of a magnet a girl turns on. A guy always has a choice of not making her do something she doesn't want to do.
Thank you, Dylan. Only.
McKay, 2016.
Yeah. I mean, Brenda was kind of shitty in the typical Brenda way, but I'm glad that this ends on, you know, an unambiguous non-blaming of Kelly for what happened.
Yeah, me too. And I like that. I like that the way he said it and the way it was written felt pretty like real and not glib and cheesy. So, yeah. You know, the villain here is a little cardboardy. And he, it's so funny, like when he gets punched out, he lands in that classic, like, I don't know how to describe it, but like there's a splay that people have been punched out land in. And it's like the classic, like 4-point knee up, like, oh, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So yeah, the way that was done was pretty 2D. I mean, the actor committed to it, good for him. But this was actually pretty well done. I was really not expecting to find little like nuggets of enjoyment and respect for this episode, but I did.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I also like in Dylan's speech that he starts it by like pre-apologizing for mansplaining. Like, I know you want to hear another guy.
I know.
Yeah, the opposite of what Brandon would do in this situation. Exactly. So that's pretty much it. Kelly later finds Steve outside and thanks him for intervening. He says he meant it when he said he loved her, and she kisses his cheek and they hug. It's nice. Brandon and Emily show up as everyone else is leaving. They go to the Peach Pit. The end. Final thoughts before we name the most and least valuable player?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Most valuable player.
Sorry.
I'm gonna give it to Dylan for all the reasons that we just said, with an honorable mention to the Cleopatra girl that shuts down David because she was awesome.
Yeah, fair. Yep, nope, totally Clyde Barrow.
All right, least. I mean, the rapist. It's kind of hard to pick anyone else.
I was gonna go with the sun maid. Proprietrix of raisins? No? Yeah, the rapist.
Fair enough.
The raisin test? Is that what you said?
You do it.
An L raisin?
No, guys.
Raisins.
Raisins.
Less
no
than
no.
Rapist. All right.
Bad, bad, dangerous to me.
After several weeks off, the Kim Challenge returns. 5 reasons from this episode Dylan is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Number 1, he's a possible squeef.
Number 2, and I thought this several times, that particularly when Brenda was like drawing her little pearl-handled derringer from out of her garter.
Yeah.
You can't be waving guns like that around. That's a good way to get yourself like,
oh yeah,
shot by BHPD. That you're like, this is a stick up. Like, not anymore. It isn't.
Yeah,
that's
right.
A Darwin Award.
No, you're right. Yeah, he comes to the door with a fake Tommy gun. I think that's what those are called, right?
Yeah,
big round
sure.
thing. Yeah, no, you're right.
He could trample you on his way to get to Brenda across the crowded party.
Yeah.
because she needs him and he's there like the Flash.
He could denigrate your masculinity by comparing you to a cowgirl, which he does.
He can bake your raisins in a cookie.
Be it. Yeah. But he wouldn't. He hates wouldn't. Raisins.
Good.
All right.
More for me.
More for you, what? Indeed. All for you.
Oh, boy. No sense. Next time on Again With This, no raisins. And who will become the first American since Chancellorsville to die of a gut shot? We'll have to find out then. In the meantime, check out the Peignoir episode in our visual aids at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previously.tv. Our producer is at Glark. Don't
plus
forget to vote in the Raisin Challenge. Vote no. I'm at Tomato Nation, and my esteemed co-host is at Tara Ariano. See you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.